This is a Rabble Podcast Network show.
New voices in your head.
It's radio.
Free
radio.
I am a dragon. When I'm cleaning up my lair, I like to collect the piles of change and donate them to rabble.ca/donate. I just total up the loonies, toonies, and doubloons I've got lying about the cave, then head for rabble.ca/donate. It's dragons like you and I that keep rabble.ca running. A place for everything and everything in its place, I always say. My donations belong at rabble.ca/donate.
In Ontario, it seems we want cheap electricity without burning coal or without building natural gas-fired peaking plants. Some people don't want nuclear plants and others don't want wind turbines. We are totally preoccupied by battles over what we don't want placed here, there, or anywhere. Yet the one proven solution that can give all protagonists exactly what they want is the one that we ignore and neglect. The cheapest and least disrupted unit of electricity available to us is not new generation, but rather the watts already generated but made available for use because of energy efficiency and conservation. In 2011, through its conservation programs, Ontario got to use 605 million kilowatt hours of electricity for just 3 cents per kilowatt hour, the cheapest new form of electricity. And there's a much greater opportunity to save even more in coming years. Today I've released the second volume of my annual greenhouse, my annual energy conservation report, Restoring Balance, which presents my assessment of the government's progress in meeting its various targets in overall electricity consumption and peaking levels. There's some good news, and there's some fumbles, and some opportunities lost, and some potentially lost. But for the biggest project, the Ontario-wide being delivered by the local distribution companies from January 1st, 2011, to December 31st, 2014, there are two targets, one for total electricity saved, and one for the reduction of peak demand. The numbers look pretty good for the first year, the 605 million kilowatt hours of savings that were achieved in 2011, means that, when you do the math, 40% of the overall four-year electrical consumption target has likely been reached. And for the target of reduced peak load by 1330 megawatts, 16% of the four-year target has been achieved. So if this level of activity is sustained over the years after 2011, it looks like they'll meet their energy consumption target by 2014, but to have to improve on peak reduction to make their goal. Perhaps the government would be wise to reconsider my long-standing recommendation to increase the spread on the time-of-use rates between peak and off-peak from the present a little less than 2 to 1 to 3 to 1, or maybe even 5 to 1, since time-of-use prices affect peak demand. A consideration when looking at 2011 electricity consumption savings is that one must realize that a great portion of those savings were the result of conservation programs established before the current framework was started in 2011. It was reasonable and a reasonable allowance to include them because it recognized that conservation programs have upfront costs and establishment timelines such that their payoff and savings follows by a year or two. It is this lag effect that prompted the warning and recommendation that I made in this report that the December 31st, 2014 cutoff in funding was problematic and should be extended for at least lest all new conservation initiatives be shut down well in advance of that date because there would be insufficient time for payoff. Now, there has been a recent development in that regard not reflected in this report. Late last month, Minister Bentley relieved this critical pressure point by extending funding for conservation programs in this framework for one more year. This important and necessary initiative effectively satisfies a major recommendation of my report. However, it does not fix the problem once and for all. In fact, the decision highlights the need for a permanent commitment to conservation funding in all long-term electricity system planning. The pursuit of improved energy productivity should be the new normal for all local distribution companies, suppliers, industry, and consumers. Now, I mentioned opportunities. The report highlights two areas where substantial improvements could be made in energy use. Our combined heat and power directive probably needs to be rethought, but one thing is clear. We do not use the low-temperature heat that comes from thermal generation electric facilities efficiently. Many European jurisdictions capture that energy in district heating systems and heat thousands of homes and businesses. We waste that heat to the atmosphere or to the nearest body of water and instead burn natural gas for space heating. The other initiative that is promising is the effort being made in the education sector to examine and ultimately improve the energy efficiency of our schools. It's not just schools are the only public buildings that could improve, quite the reverse, but the Ministry of Education should be commended for taking the initiative and working with the Boards of Education to establish baseline performance data for schools. I cite the example in the report of the Simcoe County District Board of Education that was an early adopter of this approach and is now saving $500,000 a year in operational costs, as well as reducing the load on the provincial grid. It's all about the twin promises made in the Green Energy and Green Economy Act of 2009. The government promised at that time that we have renewable energy and a culture of conservation in Ontario. Now, they've invested a significant financial and political capital in the former promise. It's time to restore the balance by engaging the opportunities in conservation.
Why is it that having the data in the utility consumption database available to the public, why is that important?
Well, I think in the first instance, why is it important to have data? And I think because nobody knows, you picture all these boards of education, in the case of not picking boards, they're the first off the mark, so congratulating them. But, you know, look at the variability that exists. These are the energy performance of boards of education standardized to gigajoules per square meter, so it's not a comparable number. And now this board now knows that they're, you know, at 0.4, they're twice as efficient as this board over here. There's no identity behind these boards, they're just anonymous. But the point is, tell the boards, they have a basis of comparison and know where they stand. So that's good for the boards. Presumably the boards of education can save a lot of money and get working on it, but why not reveal that to the public? There's no shame here. We're not, you know, this was not done deliberately. This is something we're just realizing, and I think that releasing it to the public allows the public to engage with the boards of education to say, hey, where can we find savings? What, you know, how, drive it a little faster here, boys, because we can save a lot of money for the school board.
Show everyone increasing?
No. The two things will explain. There's two, for each of the boards selected, arbitrarily a number of boards selected, there's a brown and green, two different years. The green year was colder winter than the brown year, but it shows you the pattern. It's just, and the key thing is, look at the variability. Yeah, it's twice as much.
You mentioned as well that the ministry was concerned that it's complex data and that people in the general public might not necessarily be able to read that or make the proper interpretations. As you say, the green lines here are higher because it was a colder winter and people might not take that into consideration.
Well, let's start down that road. I mean, the way to engage conservation culture in the public is to get them engaged in the numbers. And, you know, we live in a society. You know, when I was a kid, we had to, you know, I used to help the neighbor load the coal chunks in the basement, you know, because he had to hand load a furnace to heat the winter, heat the house in 40 below in Timmins in the winter. You were really conscious of your energy consumption in those days. Nowadays, where our children come in, I'm sure most kids don't even know where the thermostat is. They know the house is always the same temperature, winter or summer. We're completely detached from a culture of conservation. And, you know, one way to re-engage is say, let's show the numbers. There's no shame here. Look at the Simcoe board, which is, you know, I cite as a great example. Their schools varied about this much when they started. They had this thing within various schools, and now they've been able to reduce their overall efficiency by 16%, and they're not finished.
So it's put some numbers on your recommendations here.
Which one?
Well, I'm just wondering if this province adopted some of your recommendations, how much more energy could we save?
Let's look at what they did say. We said they said 605 million kilowatt hours were saved this year, which is just a starting number. That's about the equivalent of energy consumption of 60,000 houses. That's a city the size of Barrie. The entire energy consumption of Barrie, that's how much energy we did save in 2011 by conservation programs, and we're just getting off the mark. If we really put a serious effort into it, that's the kind of magnitude of savings that's available.
I'm just wondering if you can be specific about some of your recommendations. If we did the combined heat and power, we could...
I can't put a number. I mean, the Europeans use energy so much more efficiently, and we haven't done them. We're not even close to doing those figures yet. So, but, I mean, there are huge opportunities, is my point, available. On the Board of Education, these kinds of savings, Simcoe Board 16% more efficient, right off the bat. You know, we're talking across the province, the boards of boards of education spend $300 million a year on energy consumption. So those kind of magnitudes, it's serious money. And that's just education facilities, not hospitals, not other government buildings, not other commercial buildings.
Talk about the people. Oh, sorry, Jason.
You mentioned off the top that Ontarians want power, except from all the ways that we typically generate power. In this province, we spent, $240 million not to build any generation in one particular area, and yet you point out that we're completely detached from this culture of conservation. I mean, how is it possible that Ontario can blow so much money on not building generation and not be engaged in conservation? Why isn't conservation attracting more attention, more interest from this government?
Well, certainly you're asking the wrong guy, in my opinion. I mean, certainly that's my message. My message is, how can we possibly ignore this? This is the we're fascinated about the price of electricity. Well, this is the cheapest electricity. It's readily available. It's already built, if you like. So it involves no more disturbance of anybody's land or anybody's home, and it's readily available. And other jurisdictions in Europe and other places have demonstrated that this, in California, if you go to North America, that energy conserved is readily available, it's cheap, it's there, and it also serves our economic goals because, I mean, energy productivity, we talk about labor productivity, we got to bring our cost of labor down per unit of value produced, goods and services produced. Well, shouldn't we be producing our goods and services at the greatest energy level of energy productivity as well? Because that makes us competitive in the world. So you ask me why we're not doing it. Asking the wrong guy. Ask them why they're not doing it. Why isn't it the government policy? Why aren't they pursuing it? They promised this in 2009.
Do you have some thoughts on why you are pleased or falling on deaf ears? Is it politics? Is it the structure of government? Is it the way that they're...
First of all, I don't resign myself that my pleas are falling on deaf ears. We've got one of these recommendations already adopted. So let's say I'm having some effectiveness here. But why is this? But look at our culture. Our solution is always this. Build more. Right? That has been our solution, build more generation. We've been pursuing that for decades. And that has always been offered, tendered forward. Oh, we need more energy, build more. The problem is, the build more option now is always more expensive. And, you know, at the time when we were building hydroelectric plants 30 or 40 years ago, they were, by comparably, producing cheap electricity. But now their options are not cheap anymore. But conservation's cheap, so we've got to change that thinking. Let's not build more. Let's see what we can do more efficiently with what we got.
Talk about the peak and off-peak rates, which you have, as you know,
many times.
Are you suggesting that I know you want the difference greater, but should the peak rate be raised? Should the off-peak rate be lowered to get that difference?
Well, the balance is there. Always what they do is they figure out the amount of electricity consumed and they figure out the rates and they adjust it every six months to make sure there's enough money to pay for the whole package. But what we have in Ontario to characterize our system is we have a peaking problem, particularly in the summer, and we have a surplus baseload problem currently, especially in the spring and the fall, but to some extent all year round. And if we could shift peak from peak to baseload, we'd all save money. We save on having to build new capital infrastructure. So why wouldn't we structure everybody gets paid on the time of use. It's just all adjusted so the kilowatt hours used and the amount of money comes in is all corrected and adjusted every 6 months. So why not make it so that we make the most efficient use of that electricity, which would mean spread the difference.
You're not just saying just hike the peak rate.
No, I'm saying it's every 6 months they do it now. They work it all out. What should it be? You remember it used to be almost 3-1. Now it's down to less than 2-1. You could make the same numbers work at 5-1. Which would change behavior.
Are you hearing anything, you referenced the Green Energy Act, I know that's been an issue too for Liberal leadership candidates, I'm just wondering if you've heard anything in that particular race that interests you or excites you?
Well, that's an easy answer, no. So far the comments have been guarded and fairly general, and other than some candidates are saying they look at the whole thing again, well, it's... You know, some of my business is always a good idea to look at everything once in a while again, but I haven't seen any specific comments with respect to the issues I've raised that would excite me or encourage me in this, right? So I'll stand by my general recommendations.
So the problems you mentioned in this report, is money issue or the policy issue?
Oh, it's clearly a policy issue. It's clearly, if there were really but money, we'd pursue the cheapest form of electricity, which is conservation. And, you know, we say we're worried about the cost of electricity, but we're not pursuing the cheapest form of electricity. It seems very odd to me. Last year, when I did this report, I think the average cost of conservation was something like 3.3 cents. This year, and for 2011, it's down to 3 cents. It's even getting cheaper. And yet we're not pursuing it with aggressiveness. We're not, for instance, the big problem that I've highlighted, the fact we have these conservation programs. The current run was, the current program was intended to run for 4 years, now extended till the fifth year. But why on earth wouldn't we open-end it and have conservation as a regular part of our electricity planning in the long term and permanently? I mean, we know it saves us money, so why do we keep cutting it off short? And then every time we cut it off short, the electric distribution companies tell me that they say, oh, and now we have to lay off staff, we have to back off on programs, and then a year later they want us to start again. So let's change the thinking here. It's a policy problem.
This is the second half of a report. The first one was last May or whenever it was. Have you seen any change or progress resulting from your first report until now?
There have been some minor developments, I think in fairness, you know, the fact that Hess Prague and the governing parties and leadership has sort of slowed things down. But there's some minor developments along the problems with the getting what they call a local distribution company conservation programs approved through the OEB. There's some changes there that will change by 2014. They'll no longer need OEB approval and such things. So that's, I would rather have a change sooner. That's one of the recommendations of this report to say, come on, the LDCs have some low-cost or relatively small things that work in their areas. Why not OEB, just direct the OEB to allow low-cost ones to go ahead? But they have moved on the big picture a little bit, longer term, but not in that one. That's in this report. So there have been a few things. And, of course, Minister Bentley's announcement on December 21st to extend the 1 year by 1 year allows, it doesn't solve the problem, but it takes the pressure off and allows a few more things to happen that wouldn't have happened. So there's been a couple of things.
Are there other examples that Ontario can look to in terms of the UDC data that's available for those school boards, the utility consumption data?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've got, we've asked municipalities to do some in public buildings and release some data, but, it was in my last report, one of the things that didn't get acted on was that, government, we know the government's looking at the energy consumption of buildings, but they're not required to report publicly, and that would be a useful thing as well. I mean, that's all up, boys. If everybody get their cards on the table, and let's see what opportunities exist. Because, the other thing is, if you get this public reporting, for the private sector people out there, they love this stuff because they see the opportunities. They see, well, we see where we have potential clients and save a lot of money if we can sell our technology. It opens it up to the full innovation and creativity of the culture, not just the inner workings of a bureaucracy and the trappings of a policy culture that is trapped in the past and not recognizing the opportunities. So, to me, there's lots of opportunity across all public buildings as well as large commercial buildings. Although, in fairness, some of the commercial guys are way ahead of the game here. Anything else? Great, thanks for coming.
For rabble.ca, this is John Bonner. Thank you for listening to John Bonner's audio blog, hosted by rabble.ca and the Rabble Podcast Network.